Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, Fermentable Planet Earth. My name is Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Mary Izette.
And you're listening to
Ferment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
We air every Monday night live at 7 p.m. And Ferment About It's a show about all things fermentable with a particular focus on homebrew.
Absolutely. Just a couple quick announcements. I know we keep reiterating Homebrew Alley, National AHA BJCP sanctioned homebrew competition is happening. You can register to enter at homebrewalley.org.
And what day is that on?
That is on February 9th, February 8th and 9th at Alewife, Queens in Long Island City. And we're going to have a great big party on the 9th, announce the winners, and have a really great hang. So please, if you're in the New York area, come join us for that. It is free and open to all, 6 p.m. on. And also, here in New York, at the end of February, is New York Craft Beer Week. For more information about that, you can go to NewYorkCityBrewersGuild.com or NYCBeerWeek.com, and that will be February 22nd to March 3rd.
Yeah, and there'll be a lot of events that are planned for that, so check out the website and stay tuned for their updates.
In particular, the closing event, which is going to be freaking awesome, at Bitteria at Italy. This is relevant today because we have our guests today, Peter Hepp from Bitteria.
Peter's the head brewer at, I just plain say Bureria, at Italy.
Bureria, the Bureria.
Hey, man about it.
We also have our good friend Zach Kinney and homebrewing
friend. I am the Italian today, yes, okay.
Zach Kinney in the studio to keep us company. So we're going to start by, so Peter Hepp, where did you come from in the brewing world? How'd you start?
Well, my first batch of beer was made when I was still in high school in order to... Can we swear on this?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. in order to piss off my chemistry teacher because I knew I was going to fail the course anyway. And I was like, well, you know, growing up in a rural town outside of Birmingham, nothing can piss a teacher off quicker than alcohol. So I was like, oh, sweet. Well, I will follow the scientific method and do a really good job on this project and still just fail it, just actually run it into the ground. So that was my first batch of beer, and I was like, oh, wait, that was a lot easier than you would think. And so shortly after, I joined the Navy right after September 11th and got my ass carted across the sea. And I will tell you, at the end of a day of getting shot at on a regular basis, nothing you want to do is better than drink a beer. And they are just like, no, absolutely not. So I said, yes, absolutely so. And started doing illegal bootlegging out of a couple of tents and built a subtle notoriety, infamy, if you will. In the community for it until I got busted by the supply officer, and he comes up to me. He's like, oh, Petty Officer Hepp, you know who I am? I'm like, oh, yeah, my career's like done. I'm like, I'm going home. Sweet. And he's like, no, do you know where I'm from? I was like, you're from Central Command, dude. Like, are we going to keep going back and forth like this all day, or is he just going to go ahead and tell me I'm in trouble? He's like, I come from Northern California. And I was like, Oh, sweet. Are you like a Lagunitas guy? Or are you like Sierra Nevada guy? What's your weapon of choice? He's like, okay, I've tried your beer. It's all right. I was like, come on. I was like, I'm making saisons it's 115 degrees outside. We had like a space of about this size that we had smuggled all the portable AC units from around the camp together to try to keep it at an acceptable temperature in there, and so we eventually got busted, and he was like, oh well, you know, I order everything for the camp. I was like, well, awesome. The beer's about to get a lot better. And
victory.
And that's exactly what happened. Amazing. And you know, and of course, you know, with getting busted by a guy from Northern California, so I started like brewing IPAs constantly. Yeah. But that's really what sparked me. And once I had gotten out in 08 from active service, I had still spent 2 more years in the reserve and ended up getting carted back. But when I got out, I went to the New York restaurant school for a period and was like, well, yeah, I don't want to wear a white coat the rest of my life. This is lame. And then went to welding school after that and was like, yeah, I don't want to wear a leather jacket.
So it's all about fashion for you.
Yeah, it is. I mean, as you can tell. Yeah, right.
I mean, it's wardrobe, you know? Wardrobe of choice.
Exactly. Torn up. He's here. Dogfish head t-shirt. But see, that's just it. Like, it's a constant medium, you know? Like,
right.
Getting to wear overalls every day, like, you can just wear the same t-shirt over and over. But no, that was really, you know, I grew up, my dad, his you know, my uncles, my cousins, my brothers, everybody's a mechanic. I'm the only one who doesn't work under a hood for a living, and so it's really important to me, like, work with my hands and have like a hard day's work.
Yeah.
You know, and running a brewery by yourself,
yeah,
falls right in line with that.
So it's a far cry. What you're doing now is a far cry from brewing beer in the desert in the Middle East.
But now I'm on top of a roof, which has its own, you know, set of particulars.
So for those of you who have not been there, Eataly is this wonderful food complex with a number of different restaurants, a full grocery store, I mean, butchers, bread, everything. And on, what floor is that on? It's on the roof,
the
which
14th
is
floor.
The 14th floor. So you take you go in the back and you take the elevator up to the 14th floor and you get out and you're in this brew pub. And it's only one of 3 brew pubs in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. So it's really rather special place. It's beautiful up there. The food is amazing and the beer is amazing as well.
What are the other two?
Oh, 508 Gastrobrewery and Chelsea Brewing Company. Our own Kuzme is the brewer at 508. So I'm sitting in a room with two of
a jerk.
With yeah, 2/3 of the brewers
just don't
in Manhattan.
Lend the guy money.
So one of the things, Peter, I was very lucky to hear, we had Peter speak at the New York City Homebrewers Guild meeting, and one of the things that I thought, first of all, I have to say you're a hilarious guy. That was like one of the most entertaining meetings that we've had. But one of the things I was struck by is you had said, you know, a lot of people do collaboration beers, but I work at a collaboration brewery. So tell us a little bit of who are the people involved in that.
Excellent. So Eataly NYC's Bit Idea and forthcoming Bit Ideas are a collaboration between Dogfish Head, out of Milton, Delaware, Birra del Borgo from Bogorose, Eataly in Lazio, and from Birra Baladin in Plazzo in outside of Torino in Piemonte in Eataly. Like I said, we're the only collaboration brewery in the world. So everything that we do is these three guys bouncing ideas off of one another and me trying to facilitate it, which is awesome. Really, the project got up and off the ground. A lot of us have tried Dogfish Head or Birra del Borgo's. My Antonia was really the beer that got things moving. Sam had been invited a couple of times to Slow Foods, Terra Madre, and Presidium's overseas to be a guest speaker talking about his ancient ales program and trying to keep things as small scale and throwback as possible, you know, preserving culture through fermented beverages, and really hit it off with Teo and Leo. And they started doing these test batches of beer, and when Sam had been invited to this dinner while they were announcing that Italy was coming to New York City, Sam was like, you know, it'd be awesome. You should put a beer garden and brew pub on the roof of that thing. And the Italians were like, yay, great idea, Sam. And he's like, okay, well, I guess this is happening now. And about 23, 24 months later, Italy NYC opened. And then about 9 months after that, we got to open up, because you can imagine the logistic nightmare that is putting a brew pub in the middle of Manhattan on top of a roof.
Yeah,
we had to close down 23rd Street and crane up the all the equipment.
Wow.
And
I mean, how big of a system is it over there?
3.5 barrel.
3.5 barrel.
Got a couple of Comba uni tanks.
Okay.
All the beer that we do is cask. Mm-hmm. One, it saves a lot of space. We're 600 square feet.
That's
the average size of a New York studio apartment.
Yeah.
I think whenever they designed it, that they were being like really clever, like, oh, it's the average size of a New York studio apartment. Like, well, that's really lame, dude. Why don't you be like, oh, it's the average size of a penthouse on Park Avenue? Like, but it's a lot of fun. Like getting to do nothing but collaborations. We have 2 year-round beers. We do a dark English mild ale with chestnuts, and we do an American style pale ale with wild Roman thyme, and then the rest of the time it's whatever pops in the heads of those three guys. And if you're familiar with Baladin, Del Borgo, and Dogfish Head,
yeah,
imagine if they have, you know, like this awesome JV Northwest built small batch 3.5 barrel system and be like, you know what, I don't have to worry about, you know, wasting 200 barrels on this.
Yeah.
That's
totally
what happens.
Off-center, right?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, off-center, like, way off-center. So that's what I get to try to facilitate. So
yeah,
we'll come up with an idea, I'll send out this recipe. I'll be like, oh, I got this really awesome idea for this Saison. I'll send it off to Sam. He's like, oh, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Well, you know what you should do is you should add, you know, 17 new ingredients to it. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Of course, because you can.
That sounds awesome. That'll only take me the next 2 weeks to source and another 8 hours during the brew day. Cool. Teo is the godfather of Italian craft brewing. And he'll, you know, in his Piedmontese-driven, you know, broken English, try to be like, you know, would be really awesome. I'm like, oh, I can only imagine. And, you know, he'll explain to me, like, a dreamscape that he had and how it will pertain to this beer. And I'm like, okay, cool. That's 6 more hours on the brew day. That'll work. And then Leo gets a hold of it. And Leo is a molecular biologist by training. And his entire staff is all just some of the brightest minds in brewing. You know, they've got like 2 guys who are like no bullshit rocket scientists. Like, they study propulsion and combustible fuel at a postgraduate level, and they make beer for a living. And so he'll get a hold of it. He's like, oh, well, what we should do is a 3-step decoction mash. And then what we should do is, you know, once you get out of the primary, you should, you know, shift over to another vessel, and then we'll pitch a new yeast. And then when we get into.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, yeah. Like,
yeah, of course.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's cool. You know, I'll go ahead and cancel my vacation, dude. That sounds awesome. So it will definitely not be a double batch day. But it's incredible to watch these guys just bounce ideas off one another. And when you're talking collaborations, like I said, most of us are used to, you know, our earliest brew days were with our buddies. One, it's easy to talk your friends into cleaning up what you screwed up. And two, it's always better to have a couple different sets of eyes on it.
Absolutely.
You know, you know, guys who like I'm predominantly I love brewing with wheat. Like that's where I'm most comfortable. But, you know, some of my buddies are more IPA guys, and you know, we get together and we're like, oh, well, that makes sense. Well, why don't we just do that, and we don't have to worry about doing this? And it's like, oh, okay. Now, you do that, you got like four of your friends together, and you can just keep bouncing those ideas off mm-hmm. of one another, and it's just like never ending. And that's the awesome part of what I do, is just being able to not be afraid to tell your friend, nah, that's just a terrible idea.
Yeah, I think that's one
but
thing.
But also to listen to him.
Sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Just like getting to just to converse. Like hopefully you and I will get to do soon, Chris.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, it's good. You can really learn. Even as a home brewer, like you said, you can learn from your friends. And a lot of times, you know, I started brewing with friends. Now, then I, you know, brewed by myself a lot. Now Chris and I brew together. But
Zach,
you know,
and I brewed the White House Honey Porter and changed our recipe based on that.
Four more beers.
Baby.
Four more beers. No, that's definitely the best way. I run a single man brewery. I can do everything by myself, but getting to bring in folks like time after time, we've done. Anytime that I get in touch with my buddies who, you know, brew on the West Coast or brew in the Midwest, and they're like, oh, hey, I'm in town. I'm like, oh, cool, I will change the brewing schedule and we'll hang out. So it's just a lot of fun, and it's being able to get insight that is pre-fermentation. You know, like it's one thing to take your beer to your club and everyone be like, oh, you know what I would have done?
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, cool. I'm really glad I just wasted 8 weeks on that. Like, fermentation space would have been a little more fun than that. But
we have to take a little quick break right now.
We'll be back.
Pause for the cause. We'll talk more about what kind of things you're actually getting into.
Yep.
When we come back.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
We all know what a foodie is, but what's foodiness? Foodiness is turning us into those chubby, slushy, slurping, lounge chair-bound morons in WALL-E. Plugged in, pumped full of sugar, and brain dead.
Chef Erica Wides is here to fight against foodiness.
You have to keep drinking the Let's Get Real Kool-Aid for it to start to work.
Let's Get Real. Rediscover real food every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to Foment About It.
Foment About It.
On
Foment
Heritage About Radio it. Network. Hey. So we're back with Peter Hepp of...
Birreria.
La Birreria. La Birreria.
At Italy in Manhattan.
And we're going to talk about... So that's one other special thing about Birreria is that you have access to amazing ingredients. I mean, the fact that you do your two base beers, one has chestnuts and the other has Roman thyme, is pretty
Roman
unusual.
Thyme.
So, in particular, I had tasted the Nicoletta, which is a beautiful beer. And so I had tasted this at a Sandy benefit at the Brooklyn Brewery a couple of months ago. And Peter and I were talking about brewing with honey. So I think that's where we want to talk. You've brewed a number of beers with honey.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Chris just brewed the White House Honey Porter at 508.
I did a brown ale just before that, but I used two different methods for both of them. And to be honest, before that, all I'd ever really done with honey in the brewing process has primed my wit beers with it, because I think
Absolutely.
It's a great priming sugar, and you get a different kind of effervescence with that, using honey as opposed to corn sugar.
Yeah, so what are some of your tips and learnings for brewing with honey? Or advice, you know, I mean, relevant to what you, your experience, and then also anything that you could offer home brewers would be great.
So when you use honey in your porter, which phase of the brewing process did you use?
We threw it in, actually. I was with Zach, and we talked a little bit about it. The White House does it 15 minutes before the end of the boil.
Mm-hmm.
But I doubt they're doing a whirlpool. And so I threw it in right at flame out and right at the start of the whirlpool. I figured that it was hot enough to pasteurize it or clean it or keep any funk out of there, but so late enough to keep sort of the special aspects of the honey
Absolutely.
That I kind of wanted to preserve and feature in the beer.
Absolutely. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, this was some local honey that you'd sourced from the Finger Lakes, right?
Yes, yeah. I got it from, I bought it in McCarran Park at the farmer's market, and it's from Nature's Way Farms up in the Finger Lakes region.
Absolutely. Before we even get started, always buy your local honeys. Use unpasteurized honey. You know.
Yeah.
You can... Like I can talk all day. We could spend 45 minutes of me just like geeking out, like, you know, honey's 38% fructose, 32% glucose, 2% sucrose, and then like 3%, I don't know, including proteins, enzymes, and organic acids and esters. Because it's no bullshit. Like honey's incredible. I mean, we were making mead way before we were making beer, and that's like the merriment of those two. I think it's just so incredible. When I use honey, I've done it also during the mash.
Oh, interesting.
Like I said, they carry over a lot of enzymes, mm-hmm. That they had gained in the abdomen of the bee.
Mm-hmm.
That can help break down any of your raw grains. But I find I do the same thing. Generally, I'll add it. I'll start at like 30 minutes just so, like I said, my system's kind of like big enough. But I can only run like one of the steam jackets at a time, so I'm always worried about like dipping down on, you know, below boiling, being like, oh shit, I got 5 minutes to get this back up, or I'm gonna have to dump this batch. But you know, by adding it later, I mean, you only need about 15 minutes of it above 185 degrees to make sure that you're fully sanitized. But like, back to that. By using a large amount of honey, you've got to remember, like I said, 38% of it is fructose, which is harder for the yeast to break down.
Mm-hmm.
So using like a in the beer that we're actually drinking right now, that you guys should come and visit me and drink.
It's delicious.
Delicious. This is really, really good.
You guys are jealous.
What is this beer?
Jealous. So this is called Pomona. We can't even really call it beer because a third of the fermentables come from wheat. A third of the fermentables come from honey, and a third of the fermentables come from pressed apples. We did this beer, and it's all New York ingredients. The raw wheat's from Wild Hive Farms. The pressed apples are from Breezy Hill Orchards, and the honey's from Catskills Provisions. I'm a big advocate of going to the farmer's market, and just like you had said, like being at Italy, a lot of times I just go downstairs and just draw inspiration.
Lucky bastard.
Sure. But everybody can do that with their farmer's market. Like, you spend the weekend, go around, like, maybe you see a pie or something that somebody had brought, and you're like, oh, wow, I just draw inspiration from, you know, things that are around you. Don't try to emulate what you see on your television.
Right. That's one thing that we had talked about doing in this show is kind of doing a green market beer every, you know, couple of weeks. Yeah. So, because that's a wonderful thing. I mean, in New York City, almost none of us have gardens, at least those of us who live in Manhattan and Brooklyn. I mean, you're lucky if you do. So we have to source. If we want local, we can't grow it. We have to source it. And we do have absolutely amazing green markets with not only, you know, fresh fruits and veggies, but locally made goods like honey and even some great ciders and some baked goods and pies and cheeses and all kinds of stuff. So it is really amazing to not only get inspiration, like you said. I mean, the seasonal pies are incredible, and that's actually one thing I saw a video of somebody making a strawberry rhubarb pie beer. Oh, that's one thing I'd like to try.
I've done that. it's on point. When we're talking about the beer that we have right here, like, my straight up inspiration was apple pie. So I was like, okay, I need something that's going to be, you know, bready. So I'm going to use raw wheat, and I want something that tastes like apples. So I'm going to use pressed apples. And then I need something that's that glaze. Next time, you know, it's always like, once I had finished it, I was like, son of a bitch, I should have used raw rye. Like, to give it like a little bit of spice. Yeah. It was like flame out. And I was like, oh, it's like during the second batch, like literally like 45 minutes to this. It's like, losing my mind. But I'm going to do this probably again for Earth Day, because it's just all New York ingredients.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of fun beer. Like I said, I keep two real ales on, and that keep, you know, like, you know, we get a lot of folks in who are like, oh, well, I like stouts. I'm like, well, this is stout's little brother. Enjoy a mild. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I like really hoppy beers. I'm like, well, you're going to love this. Enjoy. But this gives people who aren't really into, you know, because at Italy we get people from all over, and not everybody's into real ale. Most people have never had a cask beer before, and they're like, no, that's just not me right now. And giving them a real cider, you know, because New York, we should be,
you know, we should more be cider.
Yeah,
cider, absolutely.
Apple production.
But it's a great movement right now towards that end, which I think absolutely is really great.
Like, we work with, like, Kritz Farms, and we use, like I said, Breezy Hill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cortland apples and bittersweet apples. Kingston apples are number one in Detroit. But we use honey in most of the beers that we did this year. I'm thinking.
And do you use the same method every time? To what end do you use different, you know, approaches?
So depending on the amount, like a fermentable, that the finished gravity is going to be percentage wise. Like, I'm not going to make a beer that I'm trying to bounce anything else out of, like, with, say, like, chestnut honey, which is, like, really, really aromatic and really, really dominating. If I'm relying on a third of my final gravity to come from that, you're not going to taste anything else. It's going to be straight up.
Yeah.
It's going to be chestnut meat. No, there's going to be no braggart, like, about it. You're not going to get any. You could do, like, that and nothing but roast barley, and you'd be like, nope, this definitely is made with chestnut. But it all depends, you know. Make yourself a little tea with it first, you know. Start with, you know, a liter of hot water, or, you know, a quart of hot water, and dilute it to what you want your final gravity to be, so you can, you know, smell it, taste it, and get an idea the percentage that you're going to get. Mm-hmm. That's going to carry over to the end.
Because you will get a lot of, depending what type of honey. I mean, you mentioned chestnut, another buckwheat I know is a very, you know, dark, strong honey. Mm-hmm. And those flavors and aromas will carry over into the final product.
Absolutely. So, And especially because you're using it at the end of the boil. It's not like a lot of it's going to get driven out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're going to get pulled up through your stack fan. So keep that in mind. But with that in mind, I do like using, like, wildflower honey. Mm-hmm. You know, clover honey, it's nice. Heather honey is nice. But I want, you know, you like you smell it and be like, whoa, that's intense. Like, oh, well, cool. And then you don't have to end up, you know, hopping it to no end to just get some aromatics off of it.
Yeah.
And a lot with the yeast, you know, Belgian yeast, love it. I use a lot of champagne yeast with it, just because I used to make a lot of mead over in the sand because it was super easy.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, but when you, when you're using honey, you also have to keep that in mind, you know, using... honey is 38% fructose, which doesn't break down as easy because, you know, it's a complex sugar. So you need to use some sort of fermenting aid. You need to use some sort of yeast nutrient that you can get at your local homebrew shop, or whether you use, I don't know, Northern Brewer. Or are we going to have to pay for that? Like,
your local homebrewer or internet homebrew.
Go see the guys
supply.
Over at
Brooklyn Homebrew, Bitter Nesters,
Brooklyn Kitchen. Yeah, so especially, I mean, I always use yeast nutrient when I brew, but especially important with honey beers. Mm-hmm. So, because those yeast need a little boost.
Because what'll happen.
A little backup.
Absolutely, because what'll happen is you'll get a false, you know, what we call like the false positive that it's went ahead and you've come to your terminal gravity, but it's just churning a little slower. Like it's already, you know, say it's already broken down all the glucose and, you know, like any remaining sucrose that might be around, but. That fructose is still hanging out, and you need to give it a little something to put a pep in its step, or, you know, pitch a little stronger than you normally would, and keep your temp up a little higher so, you know, you get your viability a little higher, around 72, because
especially like, with Belgian yeast.
Absolutely, because like I said, you've got those extra enzymes. I mean, and that's the awesome thing about honey is itself, you know, as long as you can keep it from all in out, I mean, it's vitamins A, B, D, E, K, you know, manganese, sodium, you know, sulfur, potassium, manganese, and like a bunch of like other enzymes are in it already. And it's just
cool
what you should have in there.
Yeah.
Like you said, with like priming, because like we're, like I said, an all cask brewery.
Right. What do you prime with?
It all depends.
Take Krausen from a fermenting beer. Do you?
It depends, like on what I have in the unit tanks at a time. If I can Krausen, I will. From an old, I'll sacrifice, you know, one firkin and make a little blanket pressure and drive it out and Krausen with that. But most of the time, I'll use either honey, maple syrup. Mm. Sometimes, you know, just demerara sugar.
Love it.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, this is some great advice. I have not had much experience brewing with honey. I've made meads before, so I'm definitely going to take some of these learnings home and start thinking of some new brews. So thank you very much to Peter Hepp for joining us. If you guys are in New York City or if you're visiting, please check out Bereria at Italy, New York. It's on 24th and Broadway, correct?
Yeah, 200 Fifth Avenue.
200 Fifth Avenue. It's an absolutely amazing experience, and definitely make sure you make it up to the 14th floor rooftop to have some of Peter's beers.
Great views, great beers.
Yeah, it's. Thank you. I mean, it really is an incredible experience. I took my parents there when they were visiting for the holidays, and this of all the things we did in New York City, that was her favorite place.
That's her favorite.
She likes beer, but she's not like a huge beer lover. Man, she loved that. She was blown away. She's still talking about it weeks later. So it is a fantastic place.
Definitely visit them during New York Craft Beer Week. And hopefully, maybe the three of us, you, me, Mark Zameda from Chelsea Brewing Company, will have a collaboration.
Do our own collaboration.
Yeah.
That would be freaking awesome.
The brew pubs unite.
That's right.
Everybody bring your own honey.
Yeah.
So we
love it.
Oh, wait, let me write that down. That's actually a really good idea.
I love it.
So we want to remind you that Heritage Radio Network is a not-for-profit and that your membership will help them help keep us on the air and help them all around. Also, members get 5% off all purchases at both Brooklyn Homebrew and Bitter and Esters, as well as $1 off all pints at Jimmy's number 43. So that's reason enough
Absolutely. Thanks to our engineer, Joe Galarraga, our producer, Jack Inslee, Roberta's in Bushwick for hosting us, Peter Hepp, Zach Kinney, and Jaren David,
our photographer. And we will speak to you next week, same time, 7 p.m. live on heritageradionetwork.org. Good night.
For men about it.
For men about it.
For men about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.